Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Welcome back to Set the Tape Rewind with your host Tony Black for this fortnightly chunk of movie and telly news and discussion. Regular guest Steve Norman joins me alongside Set the Tape writer and podcaster Lee Hutchison as we talk Danny Boyle's possible new gig as the Bond 25 director, and Lee gives us an update on his attendance at the Glasgow Film Festival, his reviews of which you can find on setthetape.com. TV-wise, we get into the Marvel Netflix universe as we talk Jessica Jones' second season and touch on a classic in Babylon 5, celebrating its 25th anniversary. But in the end, we're more fixated on how it used to be a double bill in the 90s on Channel 4 with Italian football. Finally, in our free play section, we do some shameless self-promotion by introducing my new Set the Tape podcast network show, Cinema Obscura. So without further ado, on with the show. So we're starting off with our film section, as we always do on Set the Tape Rewind, and we've got a couple of little bits of info about the Glasgow Film Festival coming up from Lee, our guest, at the end, which ties into information and articles on setthetape.com. But before that, this week, amongst all the film news going on, there's been a bit of Bond chatter, actually. And Bond chatter is very much in fits and dabs, you know. But this week, we might have a director in Danny Boyle. And I say might because all the newspapers and all social media are going, Danny Boyle is the next Bond director. No, he might be. So let's go with, when it is not definite yet. Eon Productions have not put out a statement. Nobody said yes, definitely. But it might be Danny Boyle. So as a Scott Lee, what do you think about this?
Well, I think everyone always forgets, like, Danny Boyle always seems to be associated as Scottish. He's a bit of an English gentleman that has dabbled in kind of a few Scottish films. I could be wrong, but I think he's one of you guys. I think he's a Brummie.
Do you know, is he? Because I've always been convinced he's Scottish, probably yeah. Because he makes, like, Trainspotting and all these things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a Brummie. So, right, but like, right. As a Scottish guy, yeah, like, his work on Trainspotting, one, two... You know, even if you just take them, I think make him an excellent candidate for Bond. I'm a huge fan of Danny Boyle. Sunshine's a fantastic movie, and I saw an argument the other day going, "Oh, they're just going for another kind of Oscar-winning director." You know, kind of trying to fit in that vein of Sam Mendes, and it's like, what kind of the movie that he won an Oscar for is completely unlike anything else he's ever made. And I wouldn't even look at that kind of movie and thinking he would apply that template to Bond. I think you look at Danny Boyle and you couldn't really pigeonhole him as a director. You know, this is the guy who can go from making a movie like Millions one day to Trainspotting 2 to Sunshine to you know, so many other things. So I'm really excited by this. I did meet him briefly last year, kind of in Scotland, when they were filming Trainspotting 2. And at that time, I was wearing one of those James Bond Barbara jackets. So I feel like destiny was written in the stars that day.
It was at that point you went, you know what, that guy, he's my inspiration. I'm going to make a Bond movie. That was it. Just use that now. That can be, you know, that can be, you can say it was all because of you if he gets the job.
And it's amazing how, like, I don't know what, maybe it's me, but I always feel people seem to have short-term memories, that among kind of us, you know, movie fans, stuff, we can go, well, Danny Boyle's directed one of the most iconic James Bond moments, his appearance in the Olympics. People seem to kind of forget that when they talk about these pieces about Danny Boyle potentially being the next James Bond director. So I think it's one of these ones that seems perfectly logical to me, much like kind of when Sam Mendes had worked with Daniel Craig on Road to Perdition. I wouldn't be surprised if Daniel Craig himself has really kind of pushed the boat out for Danny Boyle to be involved. It seems like Craig in a kind of producer role is probably going to be kind of the one championing this one, picking it out.
Yeah, possibly. I think he just wants, like, more, you know, Bond and the Queen parachuting out of a, out of a helicopter. I mean, Steve, what do you think? I mean, I ask you this every time we have some kind of like major franchise, whether it's Star Trek or whatever. But are you a Bond guy? Because I can't remember.
No, Danny Boyle, born in Radcliffe, out of just out of interest there.
Quick, oh right, where's that?
Greater Manchester. So a quick Google solve that. No, I don't get Bond at all. I've never got it from. I mean, I'm. Age-wise, Pierce Brosnan's the first one I can remember, but I've seen work of the previous ones. And I like Danny Boyle a lot, but just Bond, I don't get it. And if we're going to have Bond, I want Bond going to the moon. I want stupid old, you know, Roger Moore camp, over-the-top, ridiculous Bond, rather than what is just essentially a by numbers spy thriller, which is what the Daniel Craig Bonds have been, really. Some better than others. I don't get why people go mad over Bond, especially the newer ones. They're just a bit, I mean, not bad. They're not bad. I've sat in a cinema and watched worse things than a Bond film, but I just don't get the big deal about them. They're just not that great. They're not that original. They're not that cool.
I think as the thing is, though, a lot of people are going to assume that Danny Boyle is going to make a very sort of probably dark kind of Bond again. You know, like they had with something like Skyfall, which went back into like a sort of a dark place, or even Quantum of Solace. I think they're going to think he's going to make that. I'm not so sure because I think we know they had a script by Purvis and Wade, who are their normal writers. They've been for 20-odd years. Which more than likely was going to sort of carry on the Blofeld thing from Spectre. But Christoph Waltz seems to have backed away from the role. I think a few people have changed their, you know, it's been a bit, they've been a bit lukewarm on carrying that on. And then these guys have come in. So Boyle apparently is coming with John Hodge's writer and presumably with Daniel Craig's backing. I think that is the case. And I've got this idea for Daniel Craig's final film. Now that makes me kind of think, well, what have they thought of? Well, I think they're going to go in a very different direction from Spectre. So it might not be as over the top of Spectre. I can't see the moon factoring in, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, shallow Bond grave. Do you know what I mean? I think it might be surprising.
I think it will be exciting. I have always seemed to have associated Danny Boyle as always being linked with Bond, really since the 90s. So it doesn't feel like kind of too big a surprise to see him kind of stepping up to the plate at long last. When you hear someone like Danny Boyle, you think, yep, that makes perfect sense to me. I think Danny Boyle will be a traditional kind of Bond director, perhaps. I think the plot he'll go with will be perhaps by numbers, but in a very exciting way. I see Danny Boyle as being someone that's probably had, probably similar to Christopher Nolan in a way. They've grown up in that era of the big Bond movies, and they've probably got an idea in their head that's crystal clear, and the opportunity to now make one and create one is right there for him. And I can see him when someone goes, right, what's your idea? And he could probably paint it, illustrate it to the producers and cast really well. So I'm quite excited to see what they bring up. I want to see what could be a kind of lifetime dream for them, you know, brought to reality.
Yeah. We'll see if they get the gig, because obviously, as we say, we don't know for sure yet if they're definitely doing it. But we might get an announcement soon. So, you know, stay tuned because we might talk about it again. But speaking of films, obviously, Lee, you've been at the Glasgow Film Festival this last month and you've done some reviews, which you can find on setthetape.com. But briefly, do you want to tell us what that was like and also give us your favourite film experience of the festival?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a regular at kind of film festivals, so yeah, I was excited to cover it for a website I work for and Set the Tape. So yeah, it was an exciting kind of mix of films as always. They opened with Isle of Dogs, and as a Wes Anderson fanboy, that was a particularly exciting moment. I think we got it like just 2-3 days after the Berlin Film Festival, so that was like a particular joy. There was a few mixed bags for me. There were some movies that were somewhat disappointing or a bit poor, but there's some cracking movies like Blew My Mind, Lynn Ramsey's You Were Never Really Here, which has got a wide release as we're kind of talking. Lucky, the final film from Harry Dean Stanton, was perfect. Foxtrot was, you know, definitely one of the best films of the year for me. A wonderful Israeli movie about grief, the road to death, and Dancing in the Desert. So that was particularly exciting. And Columbus, which I could think would be a very modern day Before Sunset movie, all about someone, you know, kind of walking around the town of Columbus, which has beautiful architecture and reflecting on love, loss, and grief as well. So yeah, it was a really exciting mix of a festival. So yeah, it's a good way to kick off the festival season, really, kind of here up in Scotland.
That's good, because we don't get festivals in Birmingham. And, you know, Steve, are there any festivals, film festivals, knocking about by you?
There is, actually, but it's not kind of one where you're going to get a lot of, like, new films or indie films or anything like that. You get a few outdoor screenings in an old castle.
That's all right. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Cinema in a castle, that's not bad. Yeah.
We had it like a couple of years ago, we had a Wrath of Khan screening at Linlithgow Castle, quite Ooh. Nearby Edinburgh, to mark the, you know, an anniversary of Scotty from Star Trek's death. So that was something quite exciting. Unfortunately, I missed out on tickets for that one. But like, the Glasgow Film Festival, it's only in its 16th year, so it's still kind of a growing festival. It doesn't kind of compare with the kind of juggernaut that is the Edinburgh Film Festival, which I'll be kind of doing press for in a good few months' time. So things like that, that's just an industrial, you know, amazing, like 71-year, it's the longest running film festival as well. So it kind of, Glasgow's always somewhat in Edinburgh's, you know, shadow when it comes to festival and cultural events. But I think the Glasgow Festival continues to grow, and, you know, the success of bringing in things like Isle of Dogs continues to show it's attracts, you know, big filmmakers to show their movies here.
Yeah, it's still some pretty good films, you know, you've rattled through there as well, so by big filmmakers. So, yeah, check out Lee's reviews from the Glasgow Film Festival on setthetape.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
TV then. And there's always tons of TV, you know. There's too much TV, if we're honest. But this month, the main big hitter that's come back on Netflix is the latest Netflix Marvel show, Jessica Jones, season 2. Now, I have not watched all of it yet, but I'm getting there. But before I talk about it, have either of you guys seen any Jessica Jones?
No. I've not really watched much Marvel TV stuff. I watched the first two seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then gave up on it. And I watched the first season of Daredevil and never carried on with it. And that's been it, really.
Does anyone watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore?
I started the first season and then I dipped back in after the Captain America fallout section in the first season, but I've never watched it. Like, at one point I noticed it was on its like 100th episode. I was like, how did this happen? Yeah, it's unbelievable.
How has that happened?
I know. So, I mean, I'm the same. I kind of got the first six episodes of Daredevil when that came out, and I thought, oh man, this is really enjoyable. I'm really liking this. And then I somehow never finished it. And then I was like, well, I can't really start these other ones until I finish Daredevil, which I have not even got on the horizon of getting around to watching. So I'll get back to you about Jessica Jones in about 5 years.
There's so much Marvel TV. No, isn't there? I mean,
yeah.
The movies is a lot, but at least there's a couple of years you've got to commit to. But I mean, you've got all four of the Defenders, plus the Defenders, the Punisher, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and is there not another one that I'm missing?
I think is it Black Lightning? There's a new one that's come out.
I think that's DC.
Oh, is it?
Because there's a lot of DC ones, isn't there, as well, TV shows. You've got Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Agents of Tomorrow, Black Lightning, and I think there's another one as well. And there's Gotham. There's Gotham, which is separate,
Gotham,
isn't it? It's not part of that DC TV universe, but it's still a DC comic book TV show. So there's so much comic book TV. I can barely keep up with the movies sometimes, let alone the TV show. So it's something that's just kind of passed me by, really.
It's a problem, really. I mean, at least with the Netflix Marvel stuff, they're not like 20. I mean, the DC ones are still doing 20, 24 episodes, like a season. And in the old traditional network modelling, you're like, Jesus Christ. I mean, the thought of starting the Arrowverse with those four shows now, I'm like, I haven't got time to watch 300 episodes of telly.
I just don't start with Arrow when it was the only one they had going. And that was all right when I watched the first season of it. But again, it's one where, not out of disliking the show, but out of whatever, when it's only being shown weekly, you kind of lose track of, and you think, I can't get back into it now, it's too far gone.
This is it. And one of the things that put me off, you know. But at least with the Marvel Netflix ones, they're only 13 episodes a pop, and you get about two or three a year. So this year we've got Jessica Jones season 2, Luke Cage season 2, and I think that might be it. And then next year you'll get Iron Fist season 2, which nobody wants, but they're going to do it anyway. And then probably the Punisher season 2. Oh, you might get Daredevil season 3 actually this year as well. So the problem is, and I will be writing about this at some point, the problem is that they shouldn't be 13. Almost none of them deserve to be 13, really. The best ones for me, season 1 of Jessica Jones was great because it had probably one of the best villains in the entire Marvel universe, which was David Tennant as Kilgrave, who was this mind controlling abuser, basically. And he was like, it was just a brilliant performance. Great villain, really good story. And The Punisher was really good as well, on the whole. Right, 13 episodes of just action-packed excellence. But most of the rest of it has either been fair to middling or just bad. Like, Iron Fist was just bad. The second half of Daredevil Season 2 was just bad, you know. The Defenders was all right. Not as bad as people said. But Jessica Jones Season 2 has had a really slow start. I'm five in, and it's taking me a while. It's starting to pick up now, but it just feels like with these Marvel shows that they, I don't know if they're oversaturated, I don't know if it's that, but it's more that it feels like they've got too much freedom, oddly enough. You know, when you compare it to a show like Game of Thrones, where arguably it needs like 20 episodes a season to properly do it justice half the time, 13 episodes of this, there are certain episodes you're sitting there thinking, oh my god, when is this going to end?
Well, it's a problem. You know? It's a problem it's a problem that falls about from Netflix and Amazon Prime, isn't it? You can spam those with as much rubbish as you like, or good content, because Netflix has got some good content. I've only just got access to Amazon Prime, so I've not really had a chance to look at what they're doing yet in terms of original content. But Netflix do have good stuff. They do have bad stuff, but they can just put as much of what they want on there. It's not like it's just traditional TV channels, whereas, you know, we got Wednesday night at 9 o'clock to fill. Well, that's what's going on there, and if it doesn't work, then we'll put something else in that slot instead. Netflix, they can just put anything up, good, bad, or whatever, and it doesn't really take up anyone else's space.
And that can be part of the problem, really, with this. And it's so Jessica Jones season two, he's okay, but it's not as good as the first season. I just feel like, I can take or leave some of it, really. And I love comic book stuff. I love all the Marvel movies, pretty much most of them. You know, I'm really invested in all that. But I don't know, something about this TV universe that just doesn't, most of the time, it doesn't fire me up with excitement. And I can't put my finger on it, really. But it's out there. And we do have a look back at this first season of Jessica Jones on setthetape.com by one of our writers, Eamon Hennedy. So go and seek that out, because it's a good look back on season one if you've got season two yet to come. Speaking of articles, we've also had over this month some great pieces from Baz Greenland on the website about Babylon 5, classic 90s sci-fi here. Now, this is a show, obviously, that did have 20-odd episodes a season for five seasons back in the 90s. And Baz has been doing a retrospective look at all the seasons, the spin-off show, the movies, for its 25th anniversary. So it's been a quarter of a century since Babylon 5 came on air. Now, I was a big fan of this back in the 90s. I don't know about you guys. I loved this show, and I still do.
I watch Deep Space Nine. Babylon 5. Yeah, Babylon 5 was something I never quite clicked with. And over the kind of past few years, people have been kind of telling me, oh, you need to check it out. But it's almost like I find it difficult to, you know, fit in the time for these sorts of 25 season shows, you know. Especially even as deep diving back in, you know, committing, right, I'm going to watch 100 episodes of this kind of other TV show. And it's just so difficult. And I think, like, Babylon 5 is, there's no kind of Netflix or Amazon presence. And, you know, the DVDs I can't really see on any kind of shelves or anything like that. So it becomes one of those ones that even the temptation to dive in is almost non-existent. But I can see from people that are fans of it that they truly love it. And it's this show that seems to have really connected with people. I mean, as a kid, I was sometimes tempted, if I ever saw a show or a movie that had a Star Trek actor in it, I would definitely check out. And, you know, it certainly got Star Trek alumni appear on that. So, it was one of those shows I don't even recall much of a presence on kind of terrestrial or cable TV in the 90s. So it seems like kind of one of those shows that if you were watching it, boy, you're lucky. And if not, you've kind of missed out. It never seems to have had much of a cult presence, perhaps anything more than a cult presence in the UK.
I used to watch it in a, genuinely, and Steve will appreciate this, in a double bill on a Sunday afternoon on Channel 4 with Gazzetta Italia in the 90s. It used to be on, like something like, I don't know, 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. Immediately afterwards, it would be Gazzetta Italia.
See,
the double bill.
I would have thought Babylon 5 would have come after Gazzetta, because I remember Gazzetta. I don't remember Babylon 5, because I was always playing football on a Sunday afternoon, because kids football was a Sunday afternoon. So
you might be right, actually.
So that makes sense.
Because I remember Gazzetta being like an early morning thing, like
I think they had Gazzetta on the Saturday, which was like the magazine show, like the highlights packages and that, everything. And on the Sunday sort of late morning, early afternoon, like lunchtime, they'd have a live Serie A match on Channel 4.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of then, because I think it was on a Sunday,
yeah,
when Babylon 5 was on. So
I definitely
see most
of the match, but Babylon 5 I don't remember. But I was playing football in the afternoon. I remember Babylon Zoo on. I remember Babylon 5.
What was the Babylon Zoo song?
Spaceman.
Spaceman,
which fits quite apt with Babylon 5.
It does.
Anyone born sort of after probably 2000 listening to this will not have a clue what we're talking about.
Yes,
all of this last five minutes will just be completely wasted on them.
They'll just know James Richardson is the guy who does puns on the Guardian football podcast. They won't know him as truly in his prime.
A coffee connoisseur, it's
it's sad. But what they, you know, we, it's just, I really, I genuinely, I don't mean this sound patronising, but I genuinely feel sorry for people who didn't grow up in the 90s. Because it was great. There were so many great things on. You know, I mean, I haven't even mentioned Eurotrash. Not that that was on at the same time. But, like, do you know what I mean? It's just that it's just uniquely 90s. And especially Channel 4. Channel 4 was amazing. They used to have on.
Friends and Frasier on a Saturday night. And Friday night.
Yeah. Yeah, glorious. Anyway, we're getting way off topic. Babylon 5, anyway. Steve, did you watch it?
No. I know. I can't remember Babylon 5 at all. I remember it being a thing. I can't remember watching any of it ever.
It was niche. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it never had the popular appeal of something like Deep Space Nine, you know, or the X-Files at the time, or anything like that. You know, it was niche. It was only on British TV, as I say, on Channel 4, and it got successively buried as it got into its later seasons. So you kind of did have to. I think it might have been on Bravo or something like that as well on cable, but back in the day. But yeah, it was buried, and it was odd. It was odd. I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, it is one of the great 90s TV shows that sort of set the bar for a lot of the serialized storytelling, not just in science fiction, but in television anyway. I mean, the guy who made it, J. Michael Straczynski, he wrote entire seasons of that himself. You know, it's been described as a novel for television, and it is a unique achievement by a showrunner in that he wrote almost all of it, which is phenomenal given it's like 100 episodes, and he plotted it all out with incredible, you know, the world building in that is amazing. It is a really, really great show. It is dated. It is cheesy in places. The special effects leave something to be desired. But it's worth going back and looking at if you haven't whatever watched it, because some of the storytelling in it is marvellous. And some of the characters and some of the character arcs are just brilliant. So, yeah, go and look it up. And if you want a little bit of a taster, a dip in, check out Baz's articles on setthetape.com for an entree, and then go and hunt. You can get the DVDs really quick, really cheap on Amazon now. Sadly, it's not really on streaming. You can buy it on like Apple and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, you can get them cheap, so look them up. All right, so free play, finally. Normally we talk about something else media-wise, but we're going to do a shameless plug here this week, because we finally have the first Set the Tape Podcast Network spin-off, sort of other podcast that's launched. And no, it's not Steve's Lost podcast, which is, I think we can all agree, pretty tragic.
That'll happen. it's the Dream Team one that I'm most disappointed about, because the biggest...
Oh, what a show that
the
was.
The biggest problem is, I have contacts where I can actually interview and get hold of former cast members. That's not a problem. I can
see if you get Fletch, I will have nothing but respect for you.
The problem I have is I can't find any copies of the episodes to watch. They're just obscure. They've never got a DVD released. They're not on demand anywhere. Without prizing without doing some kind of Mission Impossible style raid on Sky headquarters, if they haven't wiped the tapes, I've no way of actually viewing Dream Team.
It's tragic.
Yeah. But they're two that I have in mind that will happen at some point. I just need to... I mean, the Lost one's a lot easier because it's readily available.
Which is ironic.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, Dream Team is Lost, and Lost is the Dream podcast or something. But yeah, they'll happen. But let's talk about podcasts that actually have happened.
Yeah, until we get the good stuff, you know, for now... We've got the newest show, which is called Cinema Obscura, which is my film show. I've dabbled in film podcasting before. I won't go into all the boring details, but I've done a couple in the past, both of which kind of got me started into this whole podcasting lark. And I'm proud of what they did in their own way, but they were, you know, a little bit in the past now. So I wanted to do something new, and I've taken a big cue from the Projection Booth podcast, which is one of the best film if not the best film podcast on the web. It's incredible. Ran by a guy called Mike White, who is my guest on the first episode of Cinema Obscura, which is the new show, which is great. Talking about Duel with me, the Steven Spielberg's first ever movie. And on varying different days, my favourite film ever. You know, I alternate between about three or four. But Duel is just an amazing film, and I will champion it to the ends of the earth. So the first episode of Cinema Obscura is now online. Lee and I are going to be recording soon after we've finished this recording, an episode. It's going to be one film, an episode, that we're talking about and going into detail, talking about the production and things like that. And the idea is to try and pick out... We're going to do some famous films, you know. We're going to do things like Singing in the Rain and Fight Club, which we've already recorded. But we're also going to try and pick out some hidden gems out there. Let's reveal it, Lee. Because I asked you, didn't I? You're a good example. I said, you know, come on the show, pick a film and... we'll talk about it. So what did you go for? And this is going to be the second episode, so this will be the
I went for Noah Baumbach's debut movie, Kicking and Screaming. Not the one that's got Will Ferrell teaching young kids how to play football, but about a very much a mumblecore movie of the 90s.
Yeah, so really different from like Spielberg's tense chase thriller through like the American desert. But yeah, really interesting, you know, film that not everyone will necessarily have heard of or watched. So, you know, it's going to be fun getting into that. So, Steve, I am going to ask you to come on. Off the top of your head, what would you pick? What would your obscure film be?
Obscure films. It's a good question. It's so obscure, I can't think of any off the top of my head. You throw me a curveball there.
I have put you on the spot here because this wasn't in the plan of what we're going to record.
No, I mean, what classes as obscure?
Well, as something you don't think many people will have seen, necessarily.
That would take a bit of thinking, I think. Off the top of my head, looking at the DVD shelf in front of me, The Replacements, the American football film starring Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that. So.
Just looking at the DVD shelf in front of me at the moment, that would be the most obvious pick from that.
All right, nice save. Yes. There. You did that well.
Yeah.
I thought a good one for you would be Mike Bassett, England manager.
See, I don't know how obscure that is, though, because a lot of people of probably our age will have seen that.
Well, probably, but I just want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'll quite happily talk about it with you all day, because I think it's a great film. I think a lot of people would look at Mike Bassett, England manager, and think it's, without actually watching it, think it's lowest common denominator comedy, when I think it actually sends up
sends
up football and British football quite well, and it's a really good parody of The Impossible Job, the Graham Taylor documentary as well.
See, I didn't even know that. So yeah, you've got to come on for that one. So that and The Replacements.
Yes.
But yeah, we'll come back to this. You can think of an obscure film, and you know, guys, if you've got any ideas for obscure films that I could cover on that with guests. Because it's going to be different guests each week, and hopefully people popping back on and off. You know, let us know. Let us know at our Twitter at Set the Tape on Twitter or on Facebook, and you know, shout out some films that you think you'd like to hear Cinema Obscura cover. So that's going to be on the same feed, the same podcast feed as the actual main podcast. This one, Set the Tape Rewind. So if you're subscribing to this, then you're also going to get Cinema Obscura every so often. It's not going to be weekly, not at this stage. I've got too many fingers and too many pies, but it will be every, hopefully a couple of times a month, or at least once a month right now. So there will be some interesting film chats. As I say, we've got Singing in the Rain coming up. We've got Fight Club as well. We've got Kicking and Screaming. We've got a bunch more on the drawing board. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be fun until we get Dream Team, until we manage to get those out. This has got to be, I think, a mission now. I've set the tape to get the Dream Team episodes.
Yeah, if anyone out there knows how I can, preferably legally, but I will look at other means as well. I'm not, you know, if it's not readily available legally, I will dip into the murky markets of black market Dream Team episodes. But yeah, if anyone out there knows how I can actually see them without paying a ridiculous amount of money. Because some guy does sell them on eBay for like £20 a series. I'm like, no.
Wow, blimey.
It's like 200 quid for the lot. No, mate. Yeah. No, not having it. So yeah, cheaply or freely, and preferably legally, if you can let me know how I can sit watch Dream Team to do this podcast that everyone will love, then let me know.
Right, your mission, guys, should you choose to accept it, is on.
Also, if you played Fletch, get in touch.
Another week then, another podcast. Thanks to our guest this week, and thanks to you for listening. You can find the show on iTunes, so please do leave us a 5-star review, or just come and have a chat with us on Twitter at Set the Tape, or on Facebook if you type in Set the Tape. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, so we'll hopefully see you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save